You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Charlie Zimmerman. Here's a 2017 story from comedic storyteller Helen Jusevic on Stories from the Hearth.
Our next storyteller is an English woman with a pioneer spirit. She loves the earth, sky, and sea. She has a partner she treasures and has three amazing children. Please welcome Helen Jusevic.
Okay, 35 years ago, my husband and our one-year-old baby Rose went to live at a back-to-the-land community in Northern California. This was a really remote place. You drove for hours on backcountry roads, and then down this mountainside on a dirt road until you came to a river crossing. Now, we didn't have Amazon Alejandro there, unfortunately. So you had a choice. The river was anywhere from 25 yards to 65 yards, depending on the time of year. So if someone hadn't left a canoe on that side, you stripped down, put the clothes on your head, and you swam across. And then the community was another mile downriver. In the winter, we got snowed in. And the river became just a raging torrent. So you just stayed there for months. If you had to leave, it was an emergency, they'd rigged up a cable car downriver, but you had to let two people would get in it, and then you'd muscle your way across, because it was uphill, the rope. If you got to the other side, then you had to snowshoe all day, from dark until dark, up the mountainside, to your car, which you'd left there a few months ago, and hopefully it would start. So we didn't leave. We didn't have internet. We didn't have electricity, obviously. We didn't have satellite. And back then, I don't even remember any solar. We had candles and kerosene lamps for light. We had wood stoves for heat and to cook on. So there was no popping out to the store. It was a constant survival between you and the animals. They liked our gardens. We had huge gardens, two of them, four times the size of this building. They loved our lodges. They loved our stores of food. In the garden, you can imagine a garden four times this size, fruit trees and everything. The deer always would get in. And to try and herd them out, they'd just go, oh, I'll just go hide behind here. And they'd just go run somewhere else. So we got to recognize the animals. And if the same deer kept getting in, we would shoot it. We had to shoot that deer, and we'd eat it. And we'd jerky up the meat for our meat for the winter, and we'd tan the hides. Now, one animal that was not that easy were the rattlesnakes. And the rattlesnakes love to sun themselves on the trails on the south side of the mountains. There was about seven families there with a bunch of kids. We all had individual lodges. We were up and down those trails all the time. And the kids were just like a wolf pack. You know, they'd just go flying down these trails. So my husband became known as Dan the Rattlesnake Catcher, because that was his name and that's what he did, you know. So, couldn't resist that one. So he would. He had this special stick that was forked on the end, and he would go up to them. We'd tell him when we saw them. He'd trap it by the back of the neck, and then he'd pick it up and put it in a bucket and relocate it somewhere else. It was just amazing. Nobody got bitten when I was there. Another animal that we had to relocate was this cute little critter called a ringtail cat. It was a bit smaller than a regular cat, and it had little pointy ears and little black shiny eyes surrounded by white. It was a member of the raccoon family, and it had a foot-long bushy tail that was white with black rings around it. Well, they used to love to live in the Sun Lodge. The Sun Lodge was our big community lodge. It was about 50 feet across, and it had a balcony all around. Well, every few weeks, all the families would go to the Sun Lodge for a few days. We'd bring all our bedding, and we'd boil big pots of soybeans and make tofu. It was the biggest treat you can imagine, and soya milk. And we'd bring our crafts, you know, we all made things. And then we'd light the big fireplace at night, and we'd sit around and tell stories. You know, that's what we'd do, and the kids loved it. So the ringtail cats, they were cute but pesky. They got into everything, and they weren't that smart. They would sit up in the balcony with their tails hanging down. So we had people called the ringtail catchers, and they would shout, "Open the door!" And then they'd jump up, they'd grab them by the tail, and they'd swing it, swing it, swing it, swing it, swing it, swing it, throw it out the door. You know, you had to do it really fast, else they'd bite your arm, you can imagine, you know. You couldn't be slow on that. Then we had bears. Now, the bears loved the smell of our ripening fruit. And fence, they'd just walk, they'd just trample the fence down. So we had to scare the bears. I remember one time I went for a walk with all the kids, one of my favorite thing to do, exploring. We did it all the time. And we were going to check on one of the lodges of a family that had been gone for a couple of months. And we're getting closer to the lodge, and we're noticing big piles of scat. I mean, like, everywhere, you know? And even the littlest kid back then could identify animal scat, because that way you knew what the animal's eating, you knew what was going on. So the kids are poking around in the scat, you know? And Helen, it's been eating almonds and figs. Well, almonds and figs was our favorite snack. We'd send a crew out to harvest almonds from abandoned orchards and harvest figs and dry them. And that was like what we ate all the time. Every lodge had its stash. So we all went quiet because we're kind of figuring out what's going on here. We creeped towards the lodge. The storeroom had been smashed down, and the big 55-gallon metal drum was tipped on its side with the lid pulled off. I don't know how it did it. There was not much left in there. That bear had been eating, sleeping, and pooping. You know, that's all it had done. So we left and we went back to get the other members of the community. We all came back with pots and pans and bowls and a couple of big shotguns, and we made such a ruckus that bear just took off and he never came back again. Two animals I had to deal with. When we were the newcomers, we were given the simplest lodge, which was like 20 foot across yurt. It was up on cinder blocks, but the floorboards had shrunk in the floor, so you could shine a light down and see the dirt underneath. I had to check the bedding every night and pull out scorpions. You know, after getting bit once, you don't mind checking the bedding every night. That wasn't that bad. One night, we woke up, and oh my goodness, a skunk was under there. And I don't know if you've ever been that close to a skunk, but your eyes water, you can't breathe, your skin burns. The next day, I told the members of the community, and they said, "Oh, we'll have an all-night fire circle, and we'll sing the skunk away." So everybody came that night, and we made a beautiful fire, beautiful fire. We sat around it, and we had our kids in their sleeping bags, and we passed the rattle, and it's probably one of my best things I've ever done in my whole life is all-night fire circles. We sang gustily all night long. Above us, we're out in nowhere, right? Above us is a carpet of stars. And the kids would wake up, and the firelight in their eyes, and it's just the most amazing thing. But it didn't get rid of the skunk. But it was worth it. So I took measures in my own hands here. I wanted my lodge. So I went and got the big catch 'em alive trap. I don't know if you've seen, they make really huge ones. And I put this outside the lodge with some precious peanut butter in it. Snap, caught that skunk. It was heavy. I put my baby on my back. I loaded it into a wheelbarrow. They can't spray when they're in a trap because they can't lift the tails up, but they still stink. And it was about half a mile. I had to push that wheelbarrow down to where the canoe was, just on dirt trails. I loaded it into this big Canadian canoe and rowed it across. Could have done with him then too, you know. I paddled it across, put it on the other side, pulled the release button, and it went running off. And I was feeling, you felt so strong when you was there. I mean, I just felt so incredibly strong. And I came back, well, a week later, we woke up to the same problem. I got the trap out again. This time I put a bit of dried fish in. Snap, caught that skunk. It was the same skunk. You recognize the animals. When you're living out there, your whole, everything becomes wide open. You see things, you hear things, you know. What now? You know, I put it back in the wheelbarrow. I set off back down the trail. It had rained a few days. And I was a little bit nervous of rowing that canoe across. You know, I had my baby. So I got down to the river, and I took my baby off and put her in the rocks. And I thought, I'm just going to have to drown this skunk, you know, because I needed my lodge. So I went into the river and I lowered the cage in the river and the skunk starts thrashing around. I just thought, I can't do it. I can't do this. And I pulled the lever and the skunk came flying out and the current took him down the river. And I could see, I had really good eyes back then, I could see... As it went round the bend, the skunk got out on the other side. And I shouted to that skunk. I said, you better not come back, because that was your last chance. Well, it rained some more, and the river went up. And I didn't see that skunk again until the following summer. But that's another story.
Helen says, I love telling stories and making everyone laugh. Laughter is such amazing medicine, both for the teller and the audience. Grants Pass, I must say, was one of my favorite locations, as the folks in the audience were always so loving and receptive and ready to laugh. What a delight to have my story featured on JPR. I am so grateful to be invited. Thank you to Helen Jusevic for featuring her story on JPR.